This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
July 11th, 2020. This is Deanna Spingola, and I'm broadcasting from the Chicago suburbs. Thanks for joining me today at republicbroadcasting.org. I invite you to visit and subscribe to Spingola. Well, you can't subscribe at spingola.com, but you can visit. Anyway, visit spingola.com. You may subscribe at spingolaspeaks.net, screeningsandyhook.net, and during the program, email questions or comments to comment@spingola.email. I invite you to visit our chat room at spingola.chatango.com. I also invite you to join me on Twitter, and that's Deanna Spingola at Deanna Spingola. We will take calls later on in the program at 800-313-9443. My guest today is Vincent Bruno. His website is stopnoahidelaw.blogspot.com, and I will post that in the chat room right now. Vincent, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me.
This is going to be a very interesting discussion today, and some people would say, "Oh, that's kind of controversial, and how can you talk about things like that?" But you are a researcher. You're not just somebody that that's making some statements without some very, very detailed background research that is impeccable. Your research is fabulous. So
thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
This is really amazing. When did you start your research, first of all?
I've been doing this for 7 years. What happened was I got into it because, you know, you always hear things about Jews and different questions about them. And, you know, there's a lot of so-called conspiracy theories that go around. And, you know, people talk a lot about Jews wanting to take over the world and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, I'm just not the type of person. I'm not the type of person to kind of condemn a religion because maybe a lot of people that are in it are involved in something bad, because there's a difference between people who are behaving badly and then an actual ideology that is bad. And I would notice that I was raised a very religious Christian, and I had to read the Old Testament a lot. And when you read the Old Testament of Judaism, it's very conservative. It's a very conservative religion. And I would notice that a lot of what people would talk about that Jews were involved in, a lot of it didn't seem very conservative. And a lot of it didn't necessarily seem like it came directly out of the Bible. And what happens is people tend to talk about Jews having there's a disproportionate amount of Jews in power in politics and in banking and these different kinds of things. And not that I didn't understand that idea, but I was really looking for something that was in the doctrine of Judaism that would tell Jews to behave this way. Because is it just individual Jews that are not behaving well, or are they getting into such high positions because they're so smart and industrious, as people like to say? Or is there really something, a spiritual and actually legal kind of reason why they're involved in all this. So what I noticed is I did try debating with Jews, and I would use the Old Testament of the Bible, and nothing ever seemed to stick, because they would always say, well, if you look at Jews, we don't really live like that anymore. The Old Testament really has nothing to do with modern-day Judaism, modern-day Jewish life. If Israel was a Torah theocracy, it would be like Islam, and it's not like that. And they were very dismissive, and they kind of, I wasn't really able to kind of get anywhere with that. And but I started doing more research, and it was weird because I was about to give up, and I said, you know what, maybe there's really nothing wrong going on here. Maybe all this is just, you know, hot air, and maybe people are just jealous, and maybe anti-Semitism is about jealousy and all this kind of stuff. And but I came across a website. It's called come-end-hear.com. come-end-hear.com. It's the webmistress is a woman named Carol A. Valentine. I don't know if that's her real name.
All right. Yes, I'm familiar with her.
Mm-hmm. You're familiar with Carol? Yeah.
Yes.
So I came across her website, and she was the one that actually introduced me to the Talmud and how the Talmud, the Babylonian Talmud, has actually become the centerpiece of the Jewish religion. That I had always thought about the Torah because I was raised Christian, so we were always told, well, the Torah was the Jewish book, and then the New Testament came from Christianity, and most Christians really don't know much about the Talmud, and they actually don't know much about Judaism. So I read about how the Talmud actually replaces and in many ways negates the Torah or the Old Testament. So I learned about the Talmud, and I noticed that when I started talking about the Talmud with Jews, they became a lot more leery, and it had a lot more impact than when I would talk about the Torah. But what was most important was on her website, she had an article. It's something like America's New Government Church or something like that. If you search Noahide Law on her, or Noahide on her website, you'll find it.
What was that website again? Could you repeat that website?
come-end-hear.com, like come and listen. It's a repeated phrase in the Talmud. She named it after the Talmud keeps saying, come and hear. The rabbis are telling people to come and hear. So I found this article on her website, called America's New Government Church, and I learned about something called the Noahide Laws, and I'm not going to describe them fully yet. I'm going to get into that, but basically, the Noahide Laws are Jewish law that applies to non-Jews. So it's like, okay, under Islam, you have the Sharia, and the Sharia is for everyone. Everyone is supposed to be under the Sharia. With Judaism, it's different in that there are two sets of laws. There's a set of laws for Jews, and there's a set of laws for non-Jews. And they're different from one another. But the thing is that these Jewish laws, these Noahide laws for non-Jews, Jews say are mandatory for us, and they seek to regulate our life religiously and spiritually, our freedom of speech. So basically what the Noahide laws do, there's seven of them, and they abolish the following. They abolish idolatry, but this is the Jewish definition of idolatry. It happens a lot. Christians hear that the Noahide laws abolish idolatry, and they say, well, that doesn't apply to me, and so I really don't need to worry about this. The thing is, this is the Talmudic definition of idolatry, and according to the Talmud and according to Jewish law, Christianity is idolatry because of the Trinity. So they say that if you worship Jesus as God, you are guilty of idolatry because Jesus, they say, becomes an idol. A man of God, according to them, is an idol, and so you are engaged in idolatry. And the Talmud makes several negative references to Christians and Jesus. It says Christians are in hell and that Jesus was a sorcerer and that he blasphemed on the cross and all these different kinds of things. So this prohibition against idolatry very much applies to Christians. Then comes the prohibition against blasphemy. And again, the Christians first hear that and they say, well, that has nothing to do with me. But it's blasphemy against the Jewish God of the Talmud, not the Christian God. And you are allowed to blaspheme Christianity, of course. You're allowed to blaspheme Jesus, but it's only the Jewish God and the Jewish religion and the Jewish people that you are not allowed to blaspheme. So the
The Talmud, as I understand it, the Torah is the first five books of the Old Testament. But the Talmud is what? It consists of about 60 books or volumes. It's an ongoing kind of a publication. Is that true?
No, the Talmud, so what happened was the Jews, when you say Torah, it's a little bit confusing because Jews will use the word Torah for both Talmud and Torah. It gets confusing. They do differentiate it sometimes where they call it written Torah, where they mean the first four books, first five books, and then they'll call oral Torah, sometimes Talmud. The reason they call it oral Torah is what happened was the actual written Torah, the Old Testament of the Bible, was not written until after the Babylonian captivity. So the Jews lived in Israel, and then the Babylonians came in and took them captive, brought them to Babylon. And
that
then
was
they were
587? 587 BC?
Something like that, close to that. And they were brought in, and I think they were in Babylon for 70 years or something like that. And then Persia came in and liberated them. And they went back to Israel, and that's around the time that the Torah was written. Now, what happened was, if you recall, Jesus spoke to the Pharisees in the Bible about the traditions of the elders, and he was talking about how the traditions of the elders had kind of come in and replaced the written law. So there was what had been written down by the sages or by the prophets. But then the Jews, what was written down was the Sadducees. Okay, the Sadducees had the temple, they ruled the temple, and they were basically the main priesthood. But after Babylon, you got what were called the Pharisees. Now, the Pharisees were more street-level kind of Jewish preachers, and they had brought in their own traditions, their own oral traditions that had supposedly been passed down since the time of Moses. And it differed from what the Torah said, and it was different, and it had different kinds of stipulations and different kinds of ideas, and it didn't quite go with what had been written down, and that's why Jesus criticized these Pharisees for their so-called traditions of the elders. What happened was, after the death of Jesus, I think within 400 years after the death of Jesus, something like that, I'm not 100% sure of the dates, they actually wrote down these traditions of the elders into a book called the Talmud. Now, yes, the Talmud is very extensive. It's volumes and volumes and volumes of books, but it is the Pharisees' doctrine. It is the very doctrine that Jesus condemned as the tradition of the elders, the traditions of the Pharisees. So that got written down. So it's no longer oral Torah. Sometimes Jews still call it oral Torah, but now it is actually written down. And it has replaced the Torah, the Old Testament, the five books of the Bible and beyond. It has replaced it in authority, and in many places it actually negates it and changes the law. So that's where the Talmud comes from. So let's get back to what these Noahide laws are. So no idolatry, no blasphemy, and those both affect Christians whether they know it or not. The third is it abolishes, you can't have any sort of illicit sexual relationships. You can't practice adultery, fornication, homosexuality. All that is banned under Noahide law. Now, the fourth law says no murder, but we're going to get into that Jews can murder non-Jews. There's a difference. Remember, Noahide law is for Jews, whereas Jews have a separate law, and that's halakha. It's for them, and they are actually, they get more rights and privileges than non-Jews do. The fifth law is do not steal. steal, but Jews are allowed to steal from non-Jews. The sixth law is do not eat the flesh cut from a living animal. So in ancient times, it was very common to, if we look at what's going on over in China, where they cut animals alive and where they eat animals alive.
That's so terrible. Oh, poor little animals.
Right.
Ugh.
But this was a common practice back in ancient times to do this. So they banned that. I don't think most people will have an issue with that. But the seventh law is the most important law. It is the only positive commandment. So the others are all negative commandments. Do not. But the seventh law is a positive commandment that you must do, and that is to set up courts of justice to enforce the other six laws. And the penalty for breaking any of these laws is death by decapitation.
Right.
So, you know, well, the thing is that this doesn't maybe in theory start sounding very disturbing to some people, but, you know, most people would think that this is just theoretical, that Jews really aren't involved in anything like this today, and I've never heard of this, so, I mean, really, is there anything to worry about? So when I went to that Coming Here website and I found her article, America's New Government Church, I learned about Public Law 102-14. Now, Public Law 102-14 was signed into law in 1991 by George Herbert Walker Bush. And I actually want to read out this law because it's very important how this law is written, what it says, and what it presents. So let's just go...
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that. And I have that same photo on my website with talking about the no-hide law, but it's different. Mine came from Bill Dannemeyer, which is the husband of Dr. Lorraine Day. But anyway, you have the exact law, so go ahead and read that.
All right, so whereas Congress recognizes the historical tradition of ethical values and principles, which are the basis of civilized society and upon which our great American nation, upon which our great nation was founded, whereas these ethical values and principles have been the bedrock of society from the dawn of civilization when they were known as the seven Noahide laws. So I want to go that clause. Congress is recognizing that the foundation of the American civilization, the foundation upon which it was built, are the seven Noahide laws. Now, that's a very important statement that we're saying, because what is the foundation of America? Isn't it the Constitution? Is it these Noahide laws? Now, you can make the argument that Congress in this statement, they're saying the Noahide law supersede the Constitution. So the question becomes, are these laws actually actionable in the United States? Do they carry any sort of weight with them? Is it possible to implement these Noahide laws now? It becomes a question that's up for debate, and you're going to notice everything in the Noahide laws that we're going to talk about is up for debate, and it could be made to look and seem and do whatever you want it to in the moment in time. If you want them to be authoritative, they could be authoritative. If you want to make them seem innocuous, they can seem innocuous, and we're going to see how this game is played by a lot of Noahide apologists. So the second clause is, whereas without these ethical values and principles, the edifice of civilization stands in serious peril of returning to chaos. Now, notice they're going to say this again, but without these Noahide laws, we're in peril of returning to chaos. So Congress is saying that is a call to action. If you're saying if you don't do this right now, the nation is going to plummet into chaos, that is a call to action. That is basically an affirmative that you need to get involved in this. So the next clause, whereas society is profoundly concerned with the recent weakening of these principles that has resulted in crisis that beleaguer and threaten the fabric of civilized society. So we are concerned about them, society is concerned, and without them we are in crisis and we are threatened. Okay? So again,
okay,
this is sort of...
Vincent, we do need to take a real quick 3-minute break, so we'll pick this up on the other side. This is very interesting. We'll be right back.
Okay.
3 minutes.
It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead.
All right, we are back, and our guest today is Vincent Bruno, that's B-R-U-N-O, and he is a Noahide law researcher. His research is impeccable, absolutely impeccable. He's not just making a lot of statements based on prejudice or hearsay or what. This is all research. It's impeccable. Okay. Vincent, continue from where you left off.
Yeah, so we're about halfway through this law. So the next clause says, whereas the justified preoccupation with these crises must not let the citizens of this nation lose sight of their responsibility to transmit these historical ethical values from our distinguished past to the generations of the future. So Congress is saying we're preoccupied with the crisis that we're in because we're not applying Noahide law, and that we have a responsibility to educate the population about the Noahide law. This word education is all over the Noahide law, and we're going to see why and why they stress so much on education. The next clause, whereas the Lubavitch movement has fostered and promoted these ethical values and principles throughout the world. Chabad Lubavitch, they are the most radical, fanatical Noahide evangelists in the world, and we're going to get back to them. They're very important. Next clause, whereas Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson, leader of the Lubavitch movement, is universally respected and revered on his 89th birthday, falls on March 26, 1991. So they're praising this Menachem Mendel Schneerson, who is the leader of the Lubavitch movement. Now, remember his name because he's going to be very important. Whereas in tribute to this great spiritual leader, the rabbi, this in his 90th year, will be seen as one of education and giving. Again, education. The year in which we turn to education and charity to return the world to the moral and ethical values contained in the 7 Noahide laws. And here's this very important. And whereas this will be reflected in an international scroll of honor signed by the President of the United States and other heads of state, now therefore be it. So we are making a promise in this law, okay? We're promising something that we're going to do. The United States Congress is saying we're going to do something, and it's going to be that our President and other heads of state are going to sign an international scroll pledging to use education and charity to return the world to the ethical values in the Noahide laws.
And it's important to recognize this starts out, it says, whereas Congress recognizes this is, and this public law 102-14 is from the American Library of Congress website.
Yes, it is. So the reason we started with Public Law 102-14 is because if anyone has ever heard of Noahide law, they've heard of Public Law 102-14. This is what everyone talks about, Public Law 102-14.
Right.
Now, in my research, what happened was I accidentally, about a year ago, I stumbled upon another law called Public Law 103-14, which also mentions the Noahide laws and said that they are the cornerstone of society. So I began to wonder to myself, I was like, this is like a sleeper law. I was like, you know, people are talking about Public Law 102-14. They want it repealed because it's offensive. I said, but they had this other law that nobody knew about that was on the books. And I just began to wonder if they had more of these laws in other places. And I actually went to govinfo.gov, the federal government's website, and I found that there are no laws, less than 7 laws and 2 proclamations which recognize the Noahide laws. And they say more than what 102-14 said. And we see 102-14 actually came later. There were many laws prior to it. And there's an actual building of this law. Now, I'm not going to read all these 7 laws. One reason is because the laws repeat themselves over and over. The first half of these laws, the same statement that the United States recognizes the Congress, I mean, the Congress recognizes the Noah Hyde laws and such. Each law says that. So if we had repealed one of them, the ones that we knew about, this would have still been on the books because they had 6-7 other laws there that would have replaced it. So the first Noah Hyde law came in 1982. So this is almost 10 years before the first law that everyone knows about, and it was signed by President Ronald Reagan. Now, this is a law that sets up the basis for the next laws that are coming. So this is where we get the Noah Hyde laws as the basis of the American nation. Society is concerned with the weakening of the Noah Hyde laws. Weakening of the Noah Hyde laws threatens society, and it is the nation's responsibility to educate the public on these Noah Hyde laws. So every law that comes after Public Law 97-166, which was the first law that signed in, repeats this. So I'm not going to repeat that again because it's in every law. But each law has something unique to it that makes the unique assertion that's very important. So one unique assertion that is never stated again is that the public needs occasional reminder of the duties of the Noah Hyde law. So not only is the government told that it's their responsibility to educate the population, the public needs to be reminded of their duties. Okay, these duties include setting up courts of justice, which would decapitate anyone who does not follow these Noah Hyde laws, including Christians. So, and then it sets up a national day of reflection to commemorate Rabbi Schneerson's work in promoting the ethics of the Noah Hyde law. So remember, Rabbi Schneerson is the leader of the Lubavitch movement. We're going to talk about Rabbi Schneerson soon, but let's just get through these laws quickly. So the next law was signed in 1987 by President Ronald Reagan. It is Public Law 100-25. So what was added, now these additional comments that I'm making right now appear in all other laws that come after it. So added into the body of law is, without Noah Hyde law, the nation stands in peril of chaos. And it discusses the Lubavitch movement, the Chabad-Lubavitch movement, which promotes these Noah Hyde laws.
Okay, now, we're going to go to a quick 3-minute break, then we'll be right back.
It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead.
All righty, we are back. Our guest is Vincent Bruno, and go ahead and continue from where you left off.
Yeah, I'm sorry. These laws might be a little bit tedious to listen to, but they're very important, and I will get through them, and then we have a lot of other stuff to get to, because we're gonna come out of the United States. But we were talking about Public Law 100-25, signed in 1987 by Ronald Reagan. It is the second of the 7 laws in America which recognize the Noah Hyde laws. So what we learn also is that Congress, on his 85th birthday, recognizes the work of Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson, and they start what they call in this law a year of turn and return. So they start this program, this Noah Hyde program called Turn and Return, in which the USA turns to education to return the world to the ethics of the Noah Hyde laws. And they call this Education Day USA. And this is basically what these laws are going to be called from now on, Education Day USA.
Okay.
Give me one second. Okay, so this in 1987, remember in 1991 in Public Law 102-14, they talked about this international scroll. In this law, they also promised that the president and other heads of state are going to sign an international scroll pledging to use education and charity to return the world to the ethics of the Noah Hyde laws. But that's in future will, okay? We're going to be doing that. So then, in 1988, we get to Public Law 100-279, which was also signed by Ronald Reagan. He did it 3 times. Again, it repeats all of those statements that are in every law. But here we learn that Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson's 86th birthday will be a continuation. So they continued this turn and return program for the Noah Hyde laws. And this, listen, the turning toward education to return the world to the values of the Noahide law, which is reflected in an international scroll, which has been signed by the president and other heads of state. So in 1987, we said we made this promise, and in 1988, by 1988, it had been fulfilled. Now, I don't know where this international scroll is. I don't know which heads of state signed it. I don't know how much authority it has. It is a secret document somewhere. I can't find it on the internet. They're very good at closing it, but it has been signed. So we're no longer waiting for an international scroll to be signed. It has been signed. So now this is the next law, which is extremely important. It was signed in 1990 by George W. Bush. So the 1991 law was signed by George W. Bush, and but that was actually the second law. So in 1990, George Bush signed into law Public Law 101-267, and in this law we continue again with this turn and return program to educate the world about the Noahide law. But we've been talking about Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson. Here in the law, it says that Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson has ascended to the leadership of the Guidance of World Jewry, and that this has been reflected in an international scroll which is signed by the president and other heads of state. Rabbi that we keep talking about is legally in the law, put up into the leadership position of Jewry. And we're going to see why it's so important. They basically made this one rabbi the Pope of Judaism. Now, we already read through Public Law 102-14, but I just want to reiterate that in 102-14, we get this, that we will be signing an international scroll in the future. Now, one has already been signed. I don't know why they need to sign another one. I don't know what changed. I don't know what was added. I don't know, but it must have been different. And since the last one, it only took a year for them to sign it. I'm sure that this has also been, this international scroll that they're talking about in 1991 has also been signed. Finally, the last law is 103-14, which is very different from the rest, but it does say that the Noahide laws are the cornerstone upon which the nation was founded. So we can see that these Noahide laws, which should be offensive to anyone, have been very much ingrained into the United States federal government. Now, I'm going to get back to American Rabbi Schneerson in a minute, but America are not the only people who have recognized these Noahide laws. We'll talk about the Israeli government's involvement in this, but the Vatican has officially twice endorsed the Noahide laws, and they have used, now remember, the Noahide laws are mandatory for non-Jews. It is not, it's not that you get to choose, not if you want to, they're mandatory. And the Vatican, met with the, let's see who it was, never mind, this was, I don't want to get into that. But, they signed a declaration with many Jews. This was the delegation of the Holy See's Commission for Religious Relations with the Jews. Okay, this is an official document, and they use this. Let's see. They talk about the Noahide laws limiting individual freedom. So it limits individual freedoms, and there's a universal moral code which is incumbent on all of humanity. They say, and then they signed another Noahide declaration. Let me just look what the language said there. It was that, again, they said it was incumbent. I'm sorry, that they are universal moral codes which are incumbent. So whenever you hear these Noahide laws, everything is mandatory, obligatory, incumbent. You have to do it. So the Vatican has signed over onto this. More importantly, the United Nations has also signed onto this. They have signed the Declaration of the Seven Laws of Noah. The language that they used, if you give me a second, or let me just see where it was, they used they used something like mandatory, obligated. So it says to insist that all Jews are obligated to teach the seven Noahide laws. They did say it was mandatory inside. I'm looking at the document now, but I don't want to spend too much time reading through it. But if you go to my website and you go to the United Nations section, you will see the entire document where you can see that the United Nations has signed on to the idea that these Noah Hyde laws are mandatory for the whole world. So we have the U.S., the Vatican, the United Nations, and now other nations have not signed it, but they have people, prominent people in these nations have endorsed them. So the president of the European Union made positive statements about the Noah Hyde laws. So did, let's see who he was, an Estonian senator said that the Noah Hyde laws have wide and universal application. President Putin over in Russia was asked to teach the nation about the Noah Hyde laws by the chief rabbi's father. So we see some kind of unofficial movements. They're trying to bring these into other nations, or at least they're trying to bring it, they're trying to do in other nations what they've done in the United States, which is to subvert the law. Another important group that has gotten involved in this from the very start and inception is Freemasonry. If you go to the Freemasonry section on my website, you will learn that in its earliest charters, the Freemasonry, it has since been removed, but in its earliest charters in the Grand Lodge of England, it said that the Freemasons are obligated, again, obligated to follow these Noahide laws, and that Noahide law is Freemasonry. There are many quotes about how Freemasonry is Noahidism, Noahidism is Freemasonry. So that's probably how this got signed into law in the United States in the first place, because we know the government is heavily populated by Freemasons. So that's probably how it got in there in the first place. So we can see that this is taking worldwide,
You also mentioned Jehovah Witnesses under the title of Freemasonry. I think you could also add the Mormon Church.
Yes, I actually just did I did a video on that. See, I was raised Jehovah's Witness, and read Fritz Springmeier. Fritz Springmeier's Be Wise as Serpents, and
yes.
he has another one on the Watchtower and the Freemasons, or something like that. He has another book, Watchtower and the Freemasons, Fritz Springmeier, and he very thoroughly goes into detail about how the Jehovah's Witness religion and even Mormonism were founded on Freemasonry. And I had actually just done a video, I do a debate with a Jewish man named Duvid, and he basically said, yes, that the Jehovah's Witnesses and the Mormons work on a centralized committee system, and that these centralized committee systems work under a Noahide structure. And, you know, he said basically, which is true, is that the higher up you go in these Freemason organizations, as you go up in the governing bodies, you find more and more Jewish influence, which is true. So
everyday Freemason who's just doing a good job, and they really don't know what the top level are doing, correct?
Yes and no. I think that unfortunately what you will find, I've been finding with lots of different groups, is that they might not know about it, but when they find out about it, their reaction is not exactly maybe what you would want. We're going to talk about how people try to downplay this a lot, confuse you. I find that a lot of these organizations that are wrapped up in this, maybe they didn't know about it, but when they find out, they take a very defensive position, or they just don't want you talking about it. Some of them will call you an anti-Semite. So there is definitely those types of problems going on when you discuss this. So bring it to light to them and see what their response is. But I can tell you my experience has been that it is not a very positive response. So before we go forward, because there's lots of stuff to talk about, let's talk about this Chabad Lubavitch and Rabbi Schneerson that were heavily mentioned in public law one, I mean, in all those public laws. I didn't go into the proclamations. Go on my website. You will see that there are two more proclamations. I don't know how much authority they have. They were both signed in by Ronald Reagan. But basically, they made the same types of statements about the Noahide laws and praise of Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson. So this Chabad Lubavitch movement is a very powerful, it is perhaps, if you go on Wikipedia, they say it's one of the most powerful Jewish organizations in the world. It is one of the most widespread. It is one of the most radical Jewish organizations in the world, one of the most wealthy. And they are one of, they are not the only, but they are one of the central bodies that are promoting these Noahide laws everywhere. They were actually involved in getting them passed in the United Nations as well as in the United States. And Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson he died in 1994, the leader of the Lubavitch movement. And they actually, most of them believed that he was the Messiah. And I can see why they would believe that, because even our own government has stated that he is the leader of world Jewry. So the government has basically said that he is the Messiah. Now, his insert into the Noahide laws, this should be extremely offensive, because he is on record saying that non-Jews have satanic souls while Jews come from holiness. And he also basically laid out a doctrine where non-Jews were put on this earth to serve Jews, and that we are basically the property of Jews. Now, this is the type of man who's being lauded. He's the type of man, he is the father of the modern Noahide movement. Noahide law has been around since the Talmud, and there have always been movements to promote the Noahide laws, but he really was the greatest proponent of these Noahide laws in history. Nobody went above him. And this is the type of man that is pushing for these global Noahide laws that are mandatory, that call for the execution of Christians as idolaters, blasphemers, which are Christians.
But decapitation? By decapitation?
Decapitation.
Is that symbolic or literal?
No, it's literal. It's literal. Some Jews will try to tell you it's symbolic, but that's rubbish. No, this is real. This is real decapitation. And even if it is symbolic, still our government should not be recognizing this. And, you know, decapitate, basically they would say that you're cut off from civilization. So, I mean, it really doesn't matter anyway. But what's most important about making Rabbi Schneerson the leader of world Jewry is that he had the most stringent, strict interpretations of the Noahide laws. First of all, we're going to talk about this. Lots of Jews will debate you, and they will say, well, Christianity is not really idolatry. Don't worry about this. We're going to talk about Shittuf. Rabbi Schneerson said, yes, Christianity is idolatry. So when it comes to how these Noahide laws are going to be applied, we know for certain that Christians are going to fall under the idolatrous rubric. However, a lot of times you're going to notice that Jews are always going to try to downplay this and gaslight you and tell you don't need to worry about this. Nothing's going to happen. This is not a problem. And one of what they bring up is they say that we can't do any Noahide executions on earth right now because there's no Sanhedrin in Israel. If you remember in the Bible, Jesus was brought before the Great Sanhedrin to be tried. The Great Sanhedrin is the highest legal authority in the Jewish religion. Now, there is no Jewish Sanhedrin over in Israel right now because there is no Jewish temple. Israel is not a totally functioning Jewish theocracy, even though they do have a lot of Jewish laws, and we're going to get into the Israeli government's involvement in all of this. But what they'll come and they'll say, well, there's no highest Jewish court. The Sanhedrin is not in session. So this is all theoretical, and you don't need to worry about this until the Messianic age arrives. So stop worrying. Rabbi Schneerson said absolutely not. He said you don't need a Sanhedrin. He said you can do the executions now. And he actually said that if you can do it by force, and he used the word force first, and he said, if you can't do it that way, do it through pleasantry and kindness, which is why we're seeing all of this, you know, education and charity and giving. These ideas are being put forward first because they can't force. But, you know, as soon as they can, they will. And we're going to talk about how they can actually get close to that, because a lot of people say, well, there's not a lot of Jews on Earth, so how could they do this? And they actually are very silently setting up their armies. How much time until the next break?
The 7 minutes.
Okay.
Well, actually, 4 minutes.
Okay.
4 minutes.
Right. So that's very important. We can start getting into some implementation of it a little bit. So let's get into that question. The one thing I want to bring about this education charity, if you go to the United Nations section of the website that I have, stopnoahidelaw.blogspot.com, the organization, which is the Chabad Lubavitch organization in the United Nations that got the United Nations to sign onto the mandatoriness of these Noahide laws, is noahide.org. It's called the Institute for Noahide Code. Go to their website. I have it listed there. They list decapitation as a requirement under these Noahide laws, right on the United Nations, not on the United Nations website, but they're officially associated with it. So they're not hiding this. But the founder, Rabbi Cohen, at the United Nations, someone asked him, well, how did you get these Noahide laws passed in the United States? Because we have the Establishment Clause, and there's no... there must be separation of church and state. And he said that it was passed as education, that the Noahide law, see, they try to trick you and they say, well, Noahide law is not a religion. It's a moral system. Anything that tells you how to worship, what you can and cannot worship, is a religion, and it comes out of the religion of Judaism. But they come forward and it's not a religion, it's a moral system, and we're here to educate. So they got it into the United States through the policy of education and not religion. You will see there's a lot of disguises going on here, and we're going to talk more about these disguises. And that same rabbi, Rabbi Cohen, in the United Nations said that they want to put these Noahide laws into the constitutions of all the governments on Earth. So he specifically stated that that is their agenda, and they are doing that. So we can see...
Mm-hmm. I don't want to interrupt your flow of thought.
No, well, I'll just finish up on this United Nations that...
A question. Now, a lot of very, very well-educated people, if you were to suggest that the Jewish religion or the Jewish people were running things, they would... just identify you immediately as an anti-Semite and think that you were crazy. And because we never hear anything about this, people outside of Congress, aren't going to talk about it. The only person that didn't sign up, I think probably, her name just went out of my head. She was running on the Green Party. No. But people will say, you're crazy. You're just absolutely crazy. How do you respond to that? Of course, you respond by developing your website.
The response is, how did they get all these laws passed? How did they get this in the United Nations? How did they get it into the Vatican in Freemasonry? And in other sections, we're going to be talking about the infiltration of Islam and Christianity as well, because they are making a lot of inroads. If they didn't have a lot of power, how on earth did they get these recognized? Quickly, I just want to say that Public Law 103-14 in 1993, which was signed, that I didn't get into too much detail, was signed by President Bill Clinton. So we had three presidents. We had Reagan, Bush, and Clinton over three administrations. All of them signed onto these Noahide laws seven times, two proclamations. How is this happening if Jews do not have a lot of power in the nation, in the United Nations, over the Vatican, in Freemasonry? How did they get these passed? Why is the European Union praising these laws? Why is Australian senators praising these laws? I mean, when they were brought before Putin and the chief rabbi's father asked him to teach these Noahide laws, why didn't he kind of get revolted by that? Why didn't, you know, what was his response? So I think that it's self-evident that there's at least a certain degree of power in the Jewish community in America and in the world if they're able to get this on paper.
Right. Amazing. It is amazing. it truly is. And you have the proof. And of course we don't hear about it on the nightly news, of course. They don't announce these laws. People aren't aware of what Congress
is doing.
Right.
Why isn't this in the media? Why isn't this in the media? Dan and Meyer knew about it. Dr. Lorraine's husband wrote mm-hmm. about it. And he knew about it. I want to talk about that.
Because he was in Congress.
Right,
he was in Congress, and that's why.
People have heard about this, and these are extremely inflammatory laws and inflammatory statements. I've had my website up for almost 7 years now. I did public demonstrations out. Not one journalist was interested in this. I did public demonstrations in the Port Authority and Grand Central Station in New York City. Huge 8-foot banners. Stop Noah Hyde Law. Repeal Public Law 102-14. Equal rights for non-Jews. I did it for a month. I did nothing. It wasn't on the news. Nothing reported on it. The Jews didn't complain. They tried to have me removed, but they didn't publicize it. Like, oh, there's this anti-Semite in Grand Central Station trying. They were very quiet about it. They didn't want anything. If I had stood there with any kind of Nazi paraphernalia, it would have been all over the news. But, I stood there for a month, and nobody picked it up. No one picked it up. Why?
Wow. Well, Cynthia McKinney is she was in the Green Party. She was the only one that refused to sign on to support Israel, which is not different than what you're talking about. She just didn't sign on, and of course they got rid of her immediately.
Right. Yeah.
Amazing.
Right.
Really
right. Yeah,
amazing.
I think that
and the
anyone
tour
that does
in New York. Wow.
Yes, a huge, I was in New York City, just nothing. There's nothing, I have come across, there was one in foreign policy, he just said, he said, you're afraid of a Sharia, you should be afraid of Noah Hyde. That was the only, I think it was Foreign Policy Magazine, it was one of the few places I've ever read anyone who even took the most mild criticism in mainstream media against the Noah Hyde laws.
Wow. And of course, we have heard about Sharia law, but never anything about Noah Hyde.
No, wow. And we're going to see that actually it's not just the paper tiger. People are always all on paper. This is all theoretical. No, it's not.
All righty. We are at the top of the hour, and we will be back momentarily.
Listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
stopnoahhydelaw.blogspot.com, and I will post this in the chat room, and I invite you to visit our chat room. We'll pick up where we left off.
I want to say this a few times throughout the broadcast. If you go to the top of any article in the website, you will see a link to sign a petition on change.org to have all of these laws repeals in the United States. It's almost at 5,000 signatures. We want to get it all the way up so we can send it to all these Congress people and they can see how many people know about this and want these laws repealed. So don't forget to sign that when you go to the website. What I want to do is I want to finish up the United States because a lot is going on here. It was important to talk about the world and Rabbi Schneerson and the Lubavitch movement, but there's still a lot going on in America. Now, you already discussed this when you had Congressman Bill Dannemeyer's wife, Dr. Lorraine Day, on, but at least Public Law 102-14, what happened was that they told everyone, well, I mean, everyone would wonder, well, how did this law get passed? How would a law like this ever get passed? I mean, how could Congress do this? They told Congress that there would be no more voting on that day, and everyone went home. Everyone went home except for four Congress people, and their names were Ben Gilman, who is Jewish, Tom Ridge, who's a big, you know, big shot, Rob Michael, and Tom Sawyer. So these four men stayed behind and signed or passed this law. So it's very obvious that they knew what they were doing was wrong because they did it in a very
Don't you have to have a quorum in order to sign a law?
A quorum can be four people. I don't know what the minimum requirement is, but obviously you can have four people as, you know, a quorum. Maybe you only need two. But this is what they did. This is how they got it in. After that, now, U.S. Congress has been opened four times under the Noahide laws. Four times they have brought in rabbis. Many of them were Chabad Lubavitch rabbis. And each and every single time they discuss about how Congress has recognized that Congress is a Noahide body. So they will always use this, the courts of justice, setting up courts, setting up laws. So they came in and they said, well, you're following what you signed on to. You are here to pass laws under the auspices of the Noahide law. And many of them praise Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson in front of the Congress. And some of them actually delineated out all of the Noahide laws. Congress actually sat there and listened to them saying no idolatry in a country that's supposed to have religious freedom. And, I mean, that just went over everybody's head. You know, to say no adultery in Congress, whatever your conviction is about adultery, I would think that there would be people in Congress that would hear that and would become upset. Did anyone write about that? Did anyone complain? Was it smothered, or did it just fly over everyone's head and nobody noticed these prohibitions against blasphemy in our Congress? When would Congress accept speeches and laws which outlaw blasphemy in America? No matter who's being blasphemed.
Vincent, I think that many times laws are presented to to Congress, to the Senate. They do not read the law. They have people who sponsor the law, and the sponsors line up supporters. They don't read the law. They're just told, and in this case, it could have been they were told, this is an education program, blah, 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 blah. And apparently Thomas Ridge had something to do with this cover-up of the truth and whatnot. But a lot of times they don't read the law before they sign it, and I think that pretty much everybody that was there signed it, and probably they may not have ever read it afterwards. And I think Pelosi spilled the beans on this when she said, well, we have to sign it in order to find out what it is. And I think she was talking about Obamacare or some other law that was quite significant.
Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, exactly. But, I mean, someone's eyes had to be on this. I mean, someone had to have read over that. And when you read that law, somebody must have asked, what is Noahide law? Because imagine that this law said Sharia law. Everyone would be up in arms. Everyone would be screaming. It would never have passed. Imagine if it said Christian law. Never would this ever have been passed. If anyone ever saw the word Christian instead of Noahide, this would have been put up in flames. But still, nobody said, well, what's Noahide law? You know what I mean? Nobody questions this. Now, that's important because we're going to get into President Trump and, you know, what is Noahide law and why aren't people questioning this? Public Law 102-14 is a commemorative law, which means that it is re-signed every year by the president. So every year, this Education Day USA is re-signed. The Chabad Lubavitch rabbis who got it signed, they all go in. You can see the pictures of them with the president every year signing this. They all go in there, and every year the president signs on to this promise. And President Trump has done it four times now, surrounded by Chabad Lubavitch. The idea that Chabad Lubavitch has not mentioned the Noahide laws to him in regards to this is ridiculous. What is even makes it even more ridiculous that somebody would say that President Trump has not heard of these Noahide laws is that Ivanka Trump, his daughter, married Jewish Jared Kushner. Jared Kushner is a Chabad Lubavitch Jew. He is a member of this radical, fanatical Noahidist sect, and his daughter converted. Now, but on the eve of her father's election, Ivanka Trump went to Rabbi Schneerson's grave in Brooklyn and prayed for her father's victory. She went to the grave of a rabbi who said non-Jews have satanic souls and that we are the property of Jews to pray for her father. Now, I've heard, I haven't investigated this law. I know Chabad Lubavitch has given him awards in the past. People say that Chabad Lubavitch was very much involved in getting him out of bankruptcy when he filed all those times. A lot of people say that they kind of own him because they got him out. I don't know much about that. But we did mention the Sanhedrin and how there is no Sanhedrin. I do want to talk about the Sanhedrin in a minute. There's an unofficial Sanhedrin in Israel that is building, that is trying to become the highest court in Israel. It's not official yet. However, this unofficial body sent a letter to Donald Trump asking him to uphold the Noahide laws. He was also asked to rebuild the Third Temple under the Noahide covenant. And, yes. And just, it was interesting, just a little tidbit, is you will notice that Jews and Noahides or Noahide apologists always try to read Noahide law into everything. So if you remember, Trump just recently passed that anti-animal cruelty bill, and Jews are trying to say, well, this comes from Noahide, don't eat the flesh cut from a living animal, so that he's actually implementing our laws. Whether he was or not, they're trying to co-opt it. As we're going to see, they're trying to co-opt a lot of movements. Before we get into how are they going to do all this? Actually, wait one second. I want to do something. No, I want to stay on America first. So let's talk about the infiltration of the Supreme Court with Noahide law.
Could I just add one thing? Mm-hmm. Dannemeyer said how it happened that they passed this law is that they introduced it as Education Day USA, and so they just kept the whole thing secret, and that it was first introduced by Robert H. Mitchell of Illinois, and so that's how it was passed. They just they passed it as an Education Day kind of thing.
Yeah, that's what they said at the United Nations, that it was not introduced as religion, it was introduced as education.
Yes, okay. Okay, so go ahead.
Okay, let's talk about, because this is infiltrating, they were infiltrating the Supreme Court with this, they're infiltrating everything. So I can't tell you, 1999. So in 1999, a father-daughter Jewish legal team named Nathan and Eliza Lewin submitted an amicus curiae brief to the Supreme Court. An amicus curiae brief means friend of the court brief, and usually it is submitted before or after the Supreme Court has made a ruling, and it is an attempt to give the Supreme Court certain ideas or to try to influence them in later and, you know, further similar rulings. So this amicus curiae brief was reviewed by the deputy president of the Supreme Court of Israel, Rabbi Justin Alon. Okay, so we're going to see Israel is involved in this, but the deputy president of the Supreme Court of Israel, reviewed this brief, and it was submitted on behalf of some very powerful Jewish organizations, the National Jewish Commission on Law and Public Affairs, also known as COLPA, and the International Association of Jewish Lawyers and Jurists, which is IAJLJ. Now, this is the second brief that the Lewins had given to the Supreme Court. They had given another brief, and in that brief, they do mention the Noahide laws being mandatory for society. The quote from the brief was, "A fundamental principle of the Jewish religious tradition is that any society, including a Gentile society, must establish a judicial system to hear and decide civil controversies. Establishment of courts is deemed one of the basic seven commands that binds all Noahides, for example, non-Jews." So they are Noahidists. We know that they are Noahide law advocates, and that is what they believe in. But this brief that we're going to talk about right now, called Brian v. Moore, M-O-O-R-E, the question was about capital punishment. And this was about cruel and unusual punishment. What they were saying, what the Lewins were saying, this was about death by electric chair. And they brought forth and they said that death by electric chair is cruel and unusual, which might be true, but their solution to it is what is important. Basically, what they came in is first they tried to convince the court that the Talmud, the Jewish Talmud, is a moral book that provides dignity and does not engage in cruel and unusual punishments. They said, right, that it does not involve cruel and unusual punishments. What they also said is they pushed decapitation, Talmudic decapitation, because the Talmud most usually calls for decapitation, and decapitation is the mode of execution that is necessary under Noahide law. So they were saying that decapitation is more humane than the electric chair, and it's more dignifying. They actually, it's funny because they tried to present this. They said, well, the decapitation is less disfiguring, so it is less humiliating, whereas the Talmud says the absolute opposite, where decapitation is the most disfiguring form of execution. And the Talmud does not provide humane ways of death. They can strangle in pits of dung. They can they can burn out your lower bowels by throwing wicks of or hot bricks of molten lead down your throat. They can bash in your head with skulls. So the idea that the Talmud provides humane death is just ridiculous. But what was also important, so they're trying to convince them about not only Noahide law, but decapitation, you know, and using clever ways to influence the court. But another important thing that they got into, now there's this, Jews have lots, Jews and Noahides, and we're going to talk about the Noahides, what is a Noahide. They have lots of very tricky ways to deceive people into thinking that this is not a problem. Again, you will always come across this. It's not what you think. It's not dangerous. This isn't a problem. It's not in the law. Nothing is going on. This is going to be repeated, and they're going to give you hundreds of different kinds of explanations as to why you don't need to worry. And one of the explanations that they use, which appeared in this brief, is that they say the court – The Talmud says that a Sanhedrin that executes someone every 7 years or every 70 years is a murderous Sanhedrin. So they come forward and they say the Sanhedrin is very, Jewish law is very lenient and does not execute people very often. However, this was in this instance, they're talking about a very specific instance where a person has committed a crime in the land of Israel, is tried, is found guilty, but then escapes the land of Israel, is brought back, and is tried again, but the original witnesses to the crime are no longer available. So what they did is they bring two witnesses to the trial, not two witnesses to the crime, two witnesses to the trial, and if these two witnesses are able to answer enough questions to the, convince the rabbis on the panel, then the person is convicted again and would be sentenced to death. And this one rabbi says, well, if we're doing that, if we're going to if we're going to listen to people who are only witnesses of the trial, then it's going to be a murderous Sanhedrin. So they are deceiving you. But what's very important is from that same passage that they quoted, that this Sanhedrin in the Talmud says it has jurisdiction both inside and outside the land of Israel. So, you know, they're setting the precedent for law coming out of the land of Israel for the rest of us. So that was the first instance of infiltration into the Supreme Court. Now, these same people, Nathan and Eliza Lewin, a year later, there was a kosher dinner at the Supreme Court, and three Supreme Court justices attended, and President Walker Bush, the younger President Bush, sent in a letter. Who were the Supreme Court justices? They were Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Stephen Breyer, and Antonin Scalia. And if anyone knows anything about Scalia, he's very pro-Talmud. He loves Jewish law. He talks about it all the time. At this kosher dinner, they were launching, it is now defunct, but it was the International Institute for Judaic Law, and they were founded for the purpose, and this is quoted, for promoting the study, understanding, and application of Jewish law and philosophy, especially as they pertain to critical issues based in contemporary society. And the man who was running this was a Chabad Lubavitch Jew. So we know what type of agenda they had. The Lewins, we know that the Lewins, they said that they discussed the Noahide laws with the Supreme Court justices that were there. And if you go on the website and you go to the Supreme Court section, you will see that Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Antonin Scalia and George W. Bush all wrote letters of absolute praise, raving praise, for this International Institute for Judaic Law. So they were briefed on Noahide law. This was the second time that they were briefed on it, and they were very pleased to have these people inside the Supreme Court. I want to talk about, well, we'll talk about that in a minute. Again, I tell you, they tried to co-opt everything. They tried to read Noahide law and everything. They tried to say that other laws were built on this, that one was saying the New England's capital laws were based on Noahide law. I don't know what New England's capital laws are. But one other thing is that now they're getting these passed on the state level. So on the state level, I know for a fact that one, the governor of Alabama signs that the Noahide laws are the foundation of the American civilization. They are passing these Education Day USAs with all of the governors in all 50 states. Not all of them mention the Noahide laws yet, but I'm sure that's coming. It has at least, the Noahide laws have at least infiltrated the Alabama governor's office, so we do know that. Some other things, let's talk about, finish up about the USA. AIPAC affirms that we are supposed to follow the Noahide laws, and the Noahide laws are mandatory for anyone. So anyone who wants to say that there are no Jews of power that are behind this, AIPAC is behind it. I have found Jews, there are Jews who suggest that the Noahide law should factor into the U.S. election, and they were trying to promote Donald Trump. You will see a lot of the Noahidists are very pro-Donald Trump. Again, Trump's daughter is a Chabad Lubavitch
right.
Jew.
The other thing, the media just really hates Donald Trump, as far as I can tell. I haven't turned my TV on for quite some time. But they seem to really hate him. And the other thing is, these laws that were signed into, you know, Reagan and Bush and Clinton, the Noahide laws were in place prior to that time. Correct?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, let's talk about that.
1982.
As soon as we get back, we're going
to... Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead.
All righty, we are back. Our guest is Vincent Bruno, and his website is stopnoahidelaw.blogspot.com. And I asked you before we went to the break, inasmuch as these laws were signed by Reagan and Bush and Clinton, and of course we know that Bush the younger Bush, studied the Talmud on a daily basis, and you referred to the White House situation with the kosherizing of the kitchen and all that. But the Noahide laws were in place prior to Reagan signing the bill. And I'm thinking of the abortion law when you talked about the Supreme Court. I immediately thought about the 1973 Roe v. Wade decision, which made it legal to slaughter your children. What's that? Go ahead.
That might not necessarily have had something to do with Noahide law. Interestingly, under Noahide law, a non-Jew is not allowed to get an abortion, and Rabbi Schneerson said that was because the child, the fetus, is meant to serve Jews, so to destroy the child is to destroy the property of Jews. A Jew may get an abortion because Rabbi Schneerson said the meaning of creation is the Jew, and that an adult Jew is more important than a fetus of a Jew. And so if a Jew aborts its child, their child, they are not killed. Again, I'm going to get into these specifics as soon as we get through some of what's going on in the world. But the differences in the law and the second-class citizenship, you know, we talked about how Jews can kill non-Jews and how Jews can steal from non-Jews. But just to finish up in America, so they try to read lots of things in. You know, they try to say, well, morals are crashing in the United States. We need Noahide law. If you remember that Poway shooting, they went and they said that, you know, America needs Noahide law, you know, to end, you know, all this kinds of violence. Give me one second. I don't know if you remember President Hopeful Cory Booker. Do you remember Cory Booker?
The name is familiar, yes.
Democrat. He was a Democrat president.
Yes.
Not president, presidential hopeful. And teacher was a radical Noahidist named Rabbi Shmuley Boteach, and he actually got Booker on board with the Noahide law. So we can see that there's this continuing infiltration of America. So now I want to actually get to the Israeli government.
Okay.
And before I get to the Israeli government, I want to talk about this unofficial Sanhedrin over in Israel. So this Sanhedrin with Jews is a gotcha question. Jews will tell you that there can be no Noahide decapitations at this time because there's no Sanhedrin, but we know Rabbi Schneerson said differently, and according to the laws, he is the leader of world Jewry, so what he says is what's going to go. There is a body over in Israel that is assembling a 71 rabbi body that is calling itself the Sanhedrin, and they are hoping to eventually become the official Sanhedrin. Now, they are involved in sending out lots of stuff. Let's talk about a Noahide. These Noahide laws are something that you can take upon yourself. So if you agree to follow these Noahide laws and to be taught by rabbis and to be led by rabbis, you are called a Noahide, a righteous, they call you a righteous Gentile. So there are these people that are converting and becoming Noahides all around the world. And this is being done by different groups in different places. But one of the places that you can go to have this done is the Sanhedrin over in Israel. You go there and you swear allegiance to the Noahide laws and to the rabbis as a hereditary priesthood. We're going to see there's a lot of racism going on in this. You swear to the rabbis as a hereditary priesthood, you become a Noahide, and you become one of their followers, and you do their bidding. Now, that's only part 1% of the armies that they are building. So people say, this is only on paper. They don't have armies. There's nothing that they can do. Don't worry about this. You're being hysterical. So they're converting these people is where they're getting first. Who knows what kind of support where these Freemasons in the United States government will give them when, where, and how, what the United Nations will give them, what the Vatican is going to give them, but they are converting these people, these people over at the Sanhedrin. Now, the nation of Israel, the government of Israel, is officially involved in these Noahide conversions. okay, there is something that cannot be done without an official Sanhedrin. If there is a special designation for a Noahide called a Gerdashov. A Gerdashov is a Noahide who lives within the borders of Israel. If you're a Noahide that lives outside of Israel, you're a Noahide. If you live inside the land of Israel, you are called a Gerdashov. It's a special designation, and it comes with a lot of legal stipulations. Now, under Jewish law, no, you can't have a Gerdashov without a Sanhedrin. That is true. However, the Israeli government, what happens is under... Are we going for a break?
Yes, yes. We'll be right back in 3 minutes. His website is stopnoahidelaw.blogspot.com. Again, I will post that in the chat room. So let's pick up where you left off.
Yeah, so when you go to the website, don't forget to sign the petition to have these laws removed. We need to get that up. So we were talking about the Israeli government's involvement in these Noahide conversions, becoming a Noahide, becoming a servant to this agenda. We were talking about that religiously, technically, in Jewish law, there's a difference between a Noahide that lives within the land of Israel and one without. If you live, you're a Noahide living inside the land of Israel, you are called a Gerdashov. And we were talking about how you need a Sanhedrin in order to accept the Gerdashov and to give out the specific title. Now, what it is or what was involved is that we've all heard of the Jewish Sabbath. Every 7 days, the Jews take rest on Saturday, but there's also a yearly Sabbath. So every 7 years, Jews need to take a rest from tilling their land and their farms. However, they don't want to starve and they don't want to lose money. So they have a special program or a special, program. It was around since ancient Israel, and they're reviving it over in modern day Israel. You see, technically, maybe you can in modern Israel, but under Jewish law, you are not allowed to sell land in the land of Israel to a non-Jew. But you can sell land to a Gerdashov, which is a Noahide within the land of Israel. So in ancient times, what you would do is you would sell the land for a year to a Gerdashov. The Gerdashov would till the land for you and make the money. And then at the end of the year, the Gerdashov would sell the land back, and then it would go back to the Jew for the next 6 years. Well, Israel is quickly becoming a religious state again. They have chief rabbis who oversee divorces and marriages and adoptions. There's many religious laws that take place in Israel, many religious functions that take place in Israel officially within the state. So for some reason, to some degree, Israel is bringing back this idea that you can't sell land to a non-Jew within the land of Israel. So the government of Israel, which is not supposed to be doing this, but they don't seem to care, and they just will do whatever they want anyway. So the idea that we don't need to worry about things because of religious technicalities, they recognized a Gerdashov officially, legally, in the land of Israel so that a Jew could sell his land to a Gerdashov for the seventh year Sabbath and then buy it back afterwards. So the Israeli government is willing to step in and legally take charge of this Noahide movement in ways that it would naturally be reserved for a Sanhedrin. So we know the Israeli government is willing to step in and get involved. Now, the Israeli government is also involved in these Noahide evangelisms. They back an organization called the Noahide World Center, noahideworldcenter.org, which is a program that seeks to convert non-Jews all around the world, and they're doing a very good job. The chief rabbi of Israel officially endorsed them. The Israeli government is officially behind it. Netanyahu is officially behind it. They are not only promoting Noahidism, but within it, they are promoting Zionism. So they want these Noahides to be religious, fanatical religious Zionists who see Israel as the center of the world. Now, another thing that the Israeli government was involved in is they gave their blessing over. There is a book that was published called The Divine Code by Rabbi Moshe Weiner. Now, in this book, he references legal documents, legal books in Judaism written by Maimonides, which says that people who do not follow these Noahide laws should be killed. So this was an education material, it was educational material for non-Jews to become Noahides, and it referenced these legal quotes where it said, if you don't follow these Noahide laws, you should be killed. The chief rabbi of Israel, both of them, you can look it up, their names on the website, the chief rabbis of Israel gave their official blessing over this book. So the Israeli government is definitely involved in this. I want to bring up that people, another thing that you're going to get into is that Jews, Noahides, Noahide apologists are going to try to tell you, it's only Chabad Lubavitch. Don't worry. Chabad Lubavitch are just radical, fanatical, extremists and a fringe element, and most Jews aren't like this. No, the Israeli government is involved. AIPAC is involved. United with Israel is involved. And there's a lot of non-Chabad Jewish organizations, groups, Israeli governmental officials that are involved in this. It's not just Chabad. So, you know, this idea that, oh, well, only radical, fanatical, you know, fringe Jews are doing this, that's also not true. Just the Israeli government is not involved in this, but there's many people that, you know, well, at least the Israeli government is not officially saying this, but there's people that are saying, well, we want to make all these Noahides all around the world so that they can support us so we can rebuild this third temple. And we all know if they're going to rebuild the third temple, they're going to have to get rid of that Dome of the Rock. And that's going to cause a lot of war. Right. And actually, so let's get into that. Now we can get into this other part that I wanted to go to is building these armies. So we talked about the Noahides. These are people that are converts proper. There's not tons of them. You've probably never met a Noahide. There's not millions of them across the world, but they are growing. So where else could they be getting these armies from? What they do, what they're doing is they're infiltrating different groups, and they are telling them, you already are a Noahide. Your religion as it is Noahide compliant. And you're not going to have to change anything, so let's work together on this. One of the groups that they're doing with this is Islam. They went to the very prestigious Al-Azhar Muslim University in Egypt, and they met with the faculty there, Jews and these Muslim faculty members, and they started this movement saying that Sharia is a form of Noahidism. So they're going in and telling Muslims, you can practice the Sharia under the Noahide law and we're all going to be fine. Now, they do this to everyone. Technically, when you go into deeper Jewish writings, Islam is not Noahide compliant. It is considered idolatry. Anything that is not rabbi-led Noahidism from the Talmud, as the rabbis tell you, is not going to be acceptable in the end. But for right now, they're telling Muslims we can work together on this. So in the United States, there are Noahidist Jews that in the U.S. we have actually official legally binding Jewish courts, these bet dins, that if religious Jews want to go into their own courts and be deliberate and have legal deliberations amongst themselves outside of secular courts, the United States and the Israeli government back these bet dins in America. The Noahidist Jews are saying, well, Muslims should work with Jews on this issue of setting up Sharia courts in America and getting them to have legal status. What I think is going to happen is they are trying to buddy up with Islam, and they want to use Islam kind of as the sword of Noahidism. I think that they are trying to prepare them to implement this on a larger scale. And then after they've done the dirty work, what I think is in the process, they would be bringing them over to Noahidism proper through a slow enculturation movement. And then when the time is right, they're going to turn around and say, well, you know what? Islam is actually idolatry. You really can't be doing this. You got to be in full Noahide compliance. It has to be led by the rabbis. You can't be just coming up with your own system. And that's what I believe is going to happen. We talked about them getting into the Vatican, and people say, well, how could they get into the Vatican if the Trinity is idolatry? This is what they're doing. When it comes to Christianity, there is something in Judaism called shittuf, S-H-I-T-U-F. Shittuf is a legal designation in Jewry for something that is not quite polytheistic, but is not quite monotheistic. Now, this type of practice is absolutely forbidden to Jews, so Jews cannot practice this. Shittuf is considered to be, the Trinity is considered to be shittuf, meaning you're not a polytheist, but you're not a monotheist either. There is debate among Jews, as to whether non-Jews are allowed to practice shittuf. So the question is a non-Jew allowed to practice Christianity, this kind of form of not polytheism? The real answer is no. Okay, the most important Jews, Rabbi Schneerson said that Christianity is idolatry. If you go deeper into the law, Maimonides, who is a very famous and most respected Jewish legal scholar, said that Christianity is idolatry. There are some modern rabbis who don't have a lot of power and are not really influential in the Noahide movement at all that would say, well, shittuf is legal and that Christians can practice it. So what they're doing is they're going into the Christian world and they're saying Christianity is shittuf. So we are telling you, you are allowed to practice shittuf. There's not going to be any kind of problem at all. And so they are misleading the church. Now, what I have been noticing that they're doing is they do try to tweak the religion. They try to slowly change the religion. So what they want to do is they want Christians to slowly start dropping the Trinity. They disarm you with the shittuf thing because, you know, when you do hear that Christianity is idolatry and that idolaters need to be beheaded, Christians start getting concerned and they might start becoming anti-Noahide. But then they use this shittuf deception. Don't worry about it. You're shittuf. You're allowed to practice shittuf. Christianity is not polytheism quite. We can work with you on this. But they would slowly try to Noahidize the church by getting the Trinity out of the church. Remember these Noahides that went over to the unofficial Sanhedrin over in Israel, and they pledged their allegiance to the hereditary priesthood? Now, just quickly, this hereditariness, you know, Jews are said to have higher souls, more levels to their soul. God loves them more than the Noahides. They encourage this idea amongst Noahides that they are animals. I have it on my website where Noahides themselves say that their souls are animalistic and they need Jews to lead them out of their animalism. This is what is being promoted. But these Noahides went over there and then they formed, when they came home, they worked at the Sanhedrin to form something called the Noahide High Council. And they wrote out a plan, which you can find on WikiNoah. So they have a Wikipedia. These Noahides have their own Wikipedia, WikiNoah. And in it, they have something called religious councils. So basically what they do is they infiltrate your religion. They get authorities from your religion to come meet with them. They decide what in your religion is Noahide compliant and what is not. And then they try to start removing what is not Noahide compliant. So they are trying to Noahidize the Christians slowly. So they are bringing the sword of Islam on their side. And they are starting to bring the evangelism of Christianity on their side. They want to Noahidize these Christian churches as quickly as possible. One of the people that get Noahidized very rapidly are the Hebrew Roots Movement, if anyone knows about them. These are Christians that try to follow more Hebrew way of life, the Old Testament. They're very quickly Noahidizing. So this is very quickly spreading in Christianity and Catholicism. Just give me a second. Now, there's not the only people that they are enculturating. They are doing this with Hindus. They are doing this with the Druze community. Druze leaders have signed on to this. Zoroastrians, they have said that Zoroastrians are Noahides, which, again, they lie to everyone. They go to everyone and tell everyone, don't worry, you're not idolaters. Don't worry about this. It's all lies. The Baha'i faith. They're very aggressively attacking paganism. I haven't seen any of them come out and say, well, you can practice paganism. I think that they know that they need to. They can't really hide on that, and I think that they know that that would kind of turn Christians and Muslims off. Now, they do tend to be anti-atheism, but they have, again, these tricks and scams. They try to present themselves, they'll say, these are just rational laws. This has nothing, remember they try to say it's not a religion. These are rational laws, they're super rational, they are humanistic, so they try to kind of give it this non-theistic spin as well. So we can see from this that they are recruiting armies by Noahidizing what already exists. Now, we already spoke about the Jehovah's Witnesses and the Mormons. Anyone who has a Freemason structure, a central governing body, and who has was set up under a sort of Freemason structure is going to be prepared for Noahide. I have heard Jehovah's Witnesses don't believe in the Trinity, so I've heard that Chabad Lubavitch has said that they are Noahides, that they are Noahide compliant. Anything that does have a central body like that, that has Freemason infiltration, is going to eventually be led towards Noahide. If, you know, they're leading you towards Noahide now. Right. They're leading everyone towards Noahide. So this is where they are building their armies. Now, another thing that we need to talk about is their infiltration into different social movements. They are
Black Lives Matter.
Yes, they are very heavily infiltrating Black Lives Matter. So what's most disturbing is they're going in and they're saying the current social justice system in America, basically being run by white Christians, is unjust towards blacks. And to have an unjust system, the Noahide laws call for a so-called system of quote-unquote justice, and this is not just, so it's not a Noahide government. So what they're going in and they're saying that these movements in the street, you know, street activity are a prelude to the setting up of Noahide courts and Noahide tribunals. I have on record one Jew saying that they would want or would influence Black Lives Matter to set up these Noahide tribunals, and that in order to bring the society back to justice, the ruling might be violence, which if they were to have their way would be mass decapitations like what happened in the French Revolution. But you see, they play both sides of the coin. They're telling Black Lives Matter that we need to use this to set up Noahide courts. Chabad has just got involved in Black Lives Matter officially and is officially trying to bring the Noahide agenda specifically under the seventh Noahide law of setting up courts of justice. They're very obsessed with Black Lives Matter and courts of justice, which are to mete out beheading. But they play both sides because there's other Jews that are saying, well, you know, what's going on in the streets is violent, and if we have violence, we need Noahide law to quell it. And everything that's, you know, that's a problem in society, whenever a problem arises in society, the answer is Noahide. I've seen other ones that they come out, they're very anti-Democrat, you know, and they say, well, Democrats allow gays and abortions. They're trying to influence both the left and the right. With Black Lives Matter, they're trying to influence them, but they're trying to get into the right with, you know, issues like social issues, trying to malign the Democrats. I just posted an article where he was trying to bring the Noahide law into the illegal immigration debate. So basically trying to say, well, if you're, you know, against this illegal immigration, then you're going to be pro-Noahide. There's infiltration on all levels. So when people say, well, this is where they're getting their manpower from, it's not just in the law. And even if it was just in the law, that's offensive enough, and these laws need to be repealed, and it shouldn't be there in the first place. But no, there's real on-the-ground activity going on out there, and we don't know how Noahidized these groups are. We don't know how prepared they are in the United Nations, in the United States government, in the Vatican. We don't know what they're setting up, but we know that they are setting it up, and they are getting a groundswell. So whenever they're prepared to do that, I'm not sure. I don't give timetables, but I can tell you this. They are very brazen, and they are not concerned with people finding out about this. They are not concerned about backlash. I think they know that what they're doing, if people heard about this, would make them very upset. And as far as I know in my interaction with them, they are cool as cucumbers. They do not feel threatened. I think that they are very confident. I think they're very confident in their position. And I think that they feel that nothing can hurt them. And I think that as the Noahide information about the Noahide law gets out there, I think you are going to see them accelerate, and they are going to become a lot more obvious and a lot more flagrant with all of this.
Wow.
Do you know Dr. Michael Brown? Do you know Dr. Michael Brown?
What does he write about?
Christianity and Judaism. He's a former Jew. He's just a name to the faith. You know, Dr. Michael Brown. He's one of these Christians that's pro-Noahide and coming forth and saying that anti-Noahide is anti-Semitism, and this growing anti-Noahidism in the Christian community is just hatred for Jews. They're getting a lot of pastors to come out, you know, and shame people into this. So, you know, they're getting armies out there. When are we going to start the phone calls?
We could start in the next hour, in the third hour. Could I ask you about Trump and his acquiescence to the Israeli government, and also the Third Temple situation that is supposed to be built, and why they've asked him to do that, and so on?
Yes. So we know Trump's daughter is Chabad Lubavitch Jew. We know that re-signs it every year, and Chabad comes to visit him. We know that the Sanhedrin has asked him to uphold the Noahide law, and we know that the Sanhedrin has asked him to be involved in the building of the Third Temple. I have heard, obviously I can't prove it, but I have heard from credible sources that this Rabbi Cohen of the United Nations, who got the United Nations to sign on, who said they want to insert the Noahide laws into all the constitutions of all the nations of Earth, that Rabbi Donald Trump was seen speaking with him at the United Nations. And I can assure you right now, if Rabbi Cohen got his hands on Trump, he's told Trump about the Noahide laws. As for who knows, right now the Israeli government's being careful. Netanyahu has come out and involves himself in the Noahide movement, especially when in regards to making these Noahide Zionists and lovers of Israel. I'm sure that the Israeli government has talked to him about these Noahide laws. I mean, they're involved in it.
Right. And the complete demolishing of the Palestinians, of course, is...
Yes. Well, in regards to the Palestinians, first of all, they're trying to convert the Palestinians. They have conversion programs in Palestine that are working. But the thing is that... So let's talk about... This is a good segue into stipulations about the Noahide law, because these stipulations are very offensive. And we'll talk about those Palestinians in a minute. But I want to talk about the inequality of Jews and non-Jews before the law. So one thing is, remember, there's two laws. There's Noahide law for non-Jews, and then there's Halakha for Jews. In order for a Jew to be executed for breaking any of the laws, there needs to be two witnesses, and they are tried by a panel of 23 to 71 judges. I can't remember which. A Noahide is executed upon the testimony of one witness and is and can be executed by one judge. So you can see that there is inequality in the law. What's also scary is that you are executed simply upon the accusation. A Jew needs two people. There needs to be two people who saw you commit this crime. And you also are entitled to an official warning. So not only a Jew needs two people to see them committing the crime, but the people watching the crime are supposed to come forward and warn the Jew against it, and then and only then would the Jew be executed under that circumstances. However, with a non-Jew, it's only one witness, it is only the accusation, and it is one judge, and they are not entitled to a warning. Nobody needed to warn them.
Wow.
Right, which is one thing. We talked about how Jews are allowed to murder and steal from non-Jews. The reason
why...
Okay,
we're at the top of the hour. We're at the top of the hour break. We'll be right back, and we'll take questions. Be right back.
Public Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
All right, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Vincent Bruno. His website is StopNoahideLaw.blogspot.com, and I would like to make reference, and I'll post that again in the chat room. I would also like to make reference to a link that you have on your website. I have so many links about the. Let's see, where is that link to the 2000. Oh my goodness, I'm just running into all kinds of things. Noahide Law and Homosexuality. The encyclopedia, the 2006, let's see, let me bring it up. The Jewish Encyclopedia, that has been made available so that you can look this stuff up, and, it's the JewishEncyclopedia.com, and, talks a lot about a lot of stuff in there, correct?
Yes, it does, about the Noahide laws. You can get an overview on it, and it's very, the Jewish 1906 Jewish Encyclopedia is very candid about it. I know we're going to be getting questions, so I'm not going to explain why, but in the Talmud, so the Noahide laws prohibit murder and theft, but Jews are allowed to murder and steal from non-Jews without any sort of penalty. Another, a non-Jew is executed for stealing the smallest denomination of coins. So even if you steal a penny, you're executed. A Jew needs to steal more to be executed. And also a Jew can escape execution if they return the items. Now, when it comes to adultery, anyone is executed. Non-Jews who sleep with one another are executed. An adult male Jew is not executed unless he sleeps with the wife of another Jew. If an adult Jew sleeps with an adult Jew can sleep with the wife of a non-Jew and escape execution. So if he sleeps with the wife of a Jew, he's executed, but if he sleeps with the wife of a non-Jew, he's not executed. Now, we all know, I don't know if your listeners know, but it's very common knowledge that the Talmud permits adult male Jews to commit both heterosexual and homosexual pedophilia with children under the age
just three.
Nine and even under three.
Oh.
If it's it's interesting. They can only have sex with a Jewish infant over the age of three, but if it's a non-Jewish infant, it can be younger than that. They do have that stipulation. But also, if they have the stipulation, right, you know, how do people even think like this? So adult Jewish males are allowed to commit pedophilia with young children. However, if a minor, the example that I found was a seven-year-old boy, non-Jewish, commits adultery with an adult, non-Jewish, married female, both are executed. Both the seven-year-old and the adult are both executed. So there is no difference. However, if a youth Jew commits adultery with a adult married Jew or an adult married non-Jew, he escapes execution. When it comes to Jews, there is a difference between being tried as an adult and being tried as a child, where you don't have that going on when you are a non-Jew. Non-Jews are not allowed to create their own holidays or they're killed. So you're not allowed to celebrate Christmas or Easter. Some Christians like to celebrate Sabbath. You are not allowed to celebrate Jewish holidays, or you're killed. Non-Jews are not allowed to learn the Talmud, and the Talmud says that's because if we learn Jewish law, we'll use it against the Jews in our own courts. So Jews who learn the Talmud are to be killed. You're only allowed to learn the Noahide laws. So you're kept ignorant of the rest of Jewish law, which is very inflammatory. You're only allowed to learn the sections that they hand to you and that you are allowed to. Now, most people are not going to be against the eating animals alive. However, there are interesting kosher stipulations on that, meaning that one of the issues is that lab-grown meat. So the stipulation is you may not eat the flesh cut from a living animal. So what religious Jews say is that in order to create lab-cloned meat, you need to take the cell off of a living animal and then use that cell. So they say you're eating the, you know, flesh cut from a living animal. So we wouldn't be able to eat that. Now let's just talk about Palestine before we start taking any kind of,
calls. We do have some callers lining up, so.
Okay, well, I'm almost done that. So,
okay.
I just want to get into contradictions quickly.
Sure.
So they talk, now, I didn't get into, there's seven laws, but under those seven laws, there's many, 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 many sub-laws called dinim. So, like, under idolatry, people wouldn't consider it idolatry, but you're not allowed to practice astrology. And different kinds of things like that. There's hundreds of these sub-laws. Some people, you know, they get, you know, some Jews, it's all up to interpretation, and you don't want it, depending on which Jew you're talking about, you're gonna get different dinim, different sub-laws, different things you have to follow. You know, who are we gonna follow? Who's in charge? Are you gonna get beheaded for doing something or not? It's very confusing, so there's lots of, contradictions. Quickly, let's just get into Palestine, and that's where I'm gonna end it. So when it comes to Palestine, they are converting the Palestinians to this Noahide agenda that is going on. They've made it clear that non-Jews who do not follow the Noahide laws are not allowed to live in Israel. That's what the chief rabbi said.
Oh.
The King's Torah came out and said that you are allowed to kill Palestinians even if they are following the Noahide laws, even if they are following the Noahide laws. And what is interesting is that when the Jews were first invading Canaan, even Canaanites that accepted the Noahide laws were driven out, or if they were permitted to stay, they had to pay a tax. So even if these Palestinians convert to Noahide law, they can still be basically second-class citizens within the land of Israel who can be killed at any time. So I don't know. We can take questions, or
sure.
You know.
Sure. Let's see who we've got here. Hanging on. Let's take John in California. John?
Hello, Jenna. Can you hear me?
Yes, uh-huh. Yes, welcome.
Thank you very much. Mr. Bruno, this is very good. Thank you for all your great information. I read a book years ago. It's called From the Temple to the Talmud, written by Dr. Harold Rome, right to the Barnes Review. And I, very interesting. I just reread it, not too long ago, and I found some more that I really didn't see in the first part. One of the things about going back to the 9th, 10th, 11th centuries when they were doing converting Bible out of Greek and that, is claiming that a lot of those who were rewriting it into the English were, had the Talmudical training. Very interesting. So, I'm wondering if, you know, a lot of this got is misinformation. Another part of it, was saying later on in the Senate they were telling, Jews were, complaining about, you know, they're being, discriminated against, you know, going back maybe in the Middle Ages in the 14th, 1500s, and, the elders were saying, well, what you do is, in this, because of their patience, you go, get into the religion, like Christians become, priests, bishops, archbishops, and undermine the religion from that over time. Same thing with, health, become doctors and practitioners, and undermine them through that as a way to, conquer them.
No, they're definitely doing that. That's Chateau deception. So they're going into the churches and they're telling the churches that you're not quite idolatrous. You are called Chateau. Now, what they're telling them in that statement is that they are, Chateau is a lower understanding. They're telling them that the Trinity is a lower understanding, that it's not right, but you're not going to be decapitated for it, which is a lie. But they're going in and they're saying it's Chateau. They are working with them in order to slowly remove the Trinity from Christianity and to insert whatever is not kosher in Christianity under the Noahide laws will slowly be weeded out by these religious councils. They go in, they find religious leaders who are prominent, that have a lot of clout and a lot of power. They form these religious councils. They come together. They parse apart the religion. They find that they write down what is acceptable, what is not acceptable, and then they start programs to weed out what they don't like. And what that does is it leaves behind a shell that looks like Christianity, but it is in fact Noahidism. And then eventually you could just drop the Christianity altogether and you're just Noahides. Like, I know one deception is that they call him Rabbi Jesus, right? So Rabbi Jesus, that he's just a rabbi, he was a good rabbi, he wasn't the son of God, he was just another rabbi to teach Judaism. That's one of the deceptions that they're using. We have infinite numbers of them.
Yeah, and like the Talmud, you just can't, like, you go into the store, you can't buy a Bible, you can't. You can't go into a synagogue and read it. And the thing is, I don't even know if you can read it through the internet anywhere, but that's, yeah, it's very difficult. Like you said, they keep it out, even a lot of Jews, that certain things you can't read, except the elders, the very high things of it.
Yeah, but you're supposed to come to. Yes?
Are you familiar with Dr. Kevin Barrett?
No.
He's an Islamologist service, but he's American, and he writes a lot of stuff, you know, talking about that and what they're doing. So he's very good. But the other thing you were talking about with the sexual against that, I heard something is probably an incest in the family, Jewish families, all the same thing you were talking about somewhat.
I'm sorry, I don't understand your question. What?
So incest among the Jewish in the family, is that something they talked about in the Talmud as permission?
No, yes. The Talmud says that uncle-niece marriages are very holy. They're considered in Rhode Island, only Jews, nieces and uncles may marry each other. That is still on the law. They passed a law in Rhode Island many years ago Jewish men can marry their nieces, and they were the only people that were allowed to do that. So, yes, incest is part of the Talmud. It's part of Jewish culture.
All right. What's your website again, Mr. Bruno?
StopNoahideLaw.blogspot.com.
All right. Well, thank you very much. It was very good. Thank you, Deanna. Keep it up.
Okay. Thank you. Take care. Okay, let's take Greg in Arkansas. Greg?
Hello, Diana. Thanks for having Mr. Bruno on. I will state that as a listener on the telephone, I'm struggling to hear you guys for some reason. Your voices aren't very loud coming through the telephone. So I'm going to try to bumble my way through my questions simply because I'm not as versed as possibly a lot of Christians are. And especially I'm not as versed as I should be on the progression of Judaism through the years and how there is, to some extent, the original Israelite Judeans have been replaced by some imposters or some, I guess what you would call it.
Talk about Khazars?
Exactly. So I wanted to start by asking a simple question. I heard Mr. Bruno state that he was raised a Jehovah's Witness. Mr. Bruno, have you strayed away from Christianity because of any of these facts that you're imparting to us? Do you claim Jesus as the Savior? Are you do you believe in the Trinity or no? Or what are your beliefs at this point, having been raised a Jehovah's Witness, and has it soured you any on Christianity?
Well, Jehovah's Witnesses don't believe in the Trinity. I wasn't raised with the Trinity. I'm not a Christian. No, I'm not a Christian. I have left Christianity. But I don't know if it would have been different if I was raised Christian. I can't say. I'm not sure. But I did not like being a Jehovah's Witness at all. I think that it taught me a lot about the Bible, but it was not a pleasant experience, no, and it definitely had a large impact on the decision that I made in my life. Yes, that's true. Yes.
Okay. So you're pretty much stating that you do not believe in a Trinity, nor do you believe in Jesus as a redeemer of the Israelite people, correct?
Correct.
Okay. One other thing I wanted to ask you, because you have an avenue, you were recently interviewed, did an interview with Adam Green. Some of your listeners are familiar with Adam Green. And I like Adam Green, but there are some suspicions about Adam Green having worked for some of the intelligence agencies. The background is there on his websites and his resumes and that kind of thing. People have dug them up, and yes, he did work for a lot of intelligence agencies, which we do know most of them are Israeli Mossad, heavily involved. I noticed all of a sudden, having known this thing about Adam Green and the great work that he does do, but he's recently done a really hard 180, and you have an avenue of communication with Adam. Something that disturbed me last night, I was watching one of his broadcasts last night, and he did a 180, and he does a lot of blasphemy against the God of the Bible, which, of course, Christians these days believe in the New Testament, and the God of the Bible, it is the same God, of course, but he was rather harsh in the first five books, or, you know, the Old Testament. And I'm wondering if you can get a word of communication through to Adam Green to back off some of the blasphemy, because it is still the same creator, and he's doing great work, but maybe you can get through to him and to explain to him. I don't think he really understands that.
Greg, do you have a question?
Pardon me?
It seems like you're trying to preach a particular thing here.
No, I'm not trying to preach anything because I'm not versed enough. It's just a matter of, he's doing great work, but he needs to lighten up, and Mr. Bruno does have a line of communication with him. I think there's a little bit of a loss between how the Jewish people have changed identities over the years, and I don't think that he fully understands the original 12 tribes in the Bible. So I don't know, Mr. Bruno, if you can get through to him and try to explain some of that to him, it might be a help for all of the people that are trying to expose this Noahide law stuff, because I know Adam Green is trying to do a lot of work with this Noahide exposure. So thank you and appreciate you being there, but if you can get a word of communication through to Adam to lighten up a little bit.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, Greg.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Okay, let's take, did you want to comment, make any comments?
No, we can, if there's other calls, like, we can take other calls.
Okay, let's take Donna in California. Donna?
Hello.
Hi.
Am I on here?
Yes, hi.
Okay. I, very informative, program today. Thank you. I'm going to ask a question. You said that the Noahide laws were a matter of worship and it's a matter of choice. You don't have to take the Noahide laws, right?
No, you do. They're mandatory. They're obligatory. And if you don't, you're beheaded.
They're mandatory?
They're mandatory. They're not. Yes, everywhere it's obligatory, incumbent, binding upon humanity. Whenever you look up the Noahide laws, everything is obligatory, mandatory, binding, behead those who don't follow it. No, it is. It's absolutely 100% mandatory. It's not. It is not up to choice. No.
Well, this kind of reminds me of in the book of Revelation where it says, and all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. This sounds like the Noahide laws.
The beheading death in the book of Revelation, those who were given the power of judgment, the power like judgment, Noahide courts, you know, beheading the faithful and stuff like that. Yes, the fact that it mentions the beheadings in the Bible and that the religious stipulations for breaking the Noahide laws is decapitation and the stress on courts, the setting up of courts. The Bible says that those who were given authority, yes. Yes, it definitely sounds like it's related.
Okay, I think we're...
No, that's what I was thinking.
We're due to a break here.
It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead.
All right, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Vincent Bruno. The website is stopnoahidelaw.blogspot.com. And we have a caller, Charles, in Florida. Charles?
Hello. Hello, Diana.
Hello.
Could I speak to you? Yeah, what's your first name of your guest? I didn't catch that.
Vincent.
What is it?
Vincent.
Vincent. Vincent, Vincent.
I couldn't hear that.
Vincent, Vincent.
All right. Oh. Well, anyway, I can't. You're different people mentioning different religious, Protestant religious groups, or the Jehovah's Witness and the Mormons are both quasi-Masonic. They were established by Masons, or Jehovah's, or the Mormons are established as a union of Masonry and anti-Masonry together in Nauvoo, Illinois. So the anti-Masons are there when the Masons persecuted in Nauvoo, Illinois, a town in southern Illinois. Regular Masons persecuted the Mormons, and there was a union of Masons and anti-Masons, if that makes any sense. They went out to Salt Lake City, established Salt Lake City.
I have a pretty good knowledge of Mormon history. I was a Mormon for most of my life.
Yeah, I know.
Seminary for several years and very well read in Mormon history. So I think you might have some facts.
No, what's his name? William Morgan's widow showed up
when
they had the persecutions in Nauvoo, Illinois, and she was in Brigham Young's harem. So she
actually, she was married to Joseph Smith. Joseph Smith had numerous wives, many of whom were 12 and 13. And she was one of them, okay? She may have ended up with Brigham Young, but she started out with Joseph Smith. Do you have a question about what Vincent...
They would be very... The groups like that in Masonry, I've been in Masonry myself. It's kind of a Gnostic Manichaean. It's very much like Unitarians. They have a position in the people that are... Or deist,
Go on my website and search Freemasonry. And if you go down, first of all, you will see that in one of its earliest charters, the Grand Lodge of England said that Freemasons were bound to follow the Noahide Code. The 21st degree of Freemasonry is called the Noahide. People are.
You mean in Scottish Rite? Scottish Rite?
Yeah, that's the more popular one, right?
Yeah, Scottish Rite was introduced in this country by an ancestor of the Sulzberger family that owns the New York Times. Michael Moses Hayes was an ancestor of the Sulzberger Ox family in 1895, bought out the control of the New York Times.
They bought it in 1896.
Pardon?
He bought it in 1896. And they've controlled the New York Times since then.
So it Charleston, South Carolina in 1808 is where Southern Jurisdiction Scottish Rite started. Then 1812, a group broke away and created the Northern Jurisdiction. This is pre-Albert Pike. Albert Pike only came along and reorganized the Southern Jurisdiction after, like, the 1850s.
Right.
Towards the time of the Civil War. But Moses Michael Hayes, you never read about him in history of Masonry in the United States or Masonry. Abraham Jonas, you ever heard of him? Abraham Lincoln's discoverer and boss in Illinois?
If you go to the website, you will see there are lots of quotes from Freemasons. It's Noahide also. Another interesting that happened, in Freemasonry, you have to be a monotheist, and that's the first rule of the Noahides. When they had the Grand Lodge over in Calcutta, they allowed Zoroastrians in, and actually they called Zoroastrians Noahides. I don't know if I have that up on the website, but I do have it on another one. They, over in England, in India, the Zoroastrians are called Parsis, but, Freemasonry labeled the Parsis Noahide. So we know that they're interested in Noahidizing people. The 21st degree is the Noahide. People think that they are going to be the Noahide judge. I know in York Freemasonry, there's the Mariner, and it has everything to do with Noah and Noah's regalia and the rainbow. So in both York and Scottish Freemasonry, you have this Noahide infiltration if it is not founded, because Freemasonry is all about Solomon's Temple. And all the magic that came out of Solomon's Temple, and it's all Jewish mysticism. Go to the stopnoahidelaw.blogspot, and you'll see both Jews and Freemasonry, how deep and detailed they went into saying that Judaism is Freemasonry, and Freemasonry is Judaism.
Right, that's correct. And Albert Pike says it in Morals and Dogma that at the higher levels, it's Kabbalism. The Kabbalah, Israel Shahak, I don't know if you ever read him, a Jewish Israeli dissident that wrote Jewish history, Jewish religion.
He says
in there that since modern Judaism is Kabbalistic Judaism, it's not the old Judaism, it's become Kabbalistic. He said whether they deny it or not. They worship five gods. I guess he wasn't joking.
Okay, we're going to break. If you'd like to hold over, it's fine. Joseph Smith was very much into the Kabbalah. Okay, we'll be right back.
It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead.
All right, we are back. And our guest is Vincent Bruno. His website is stopnoahidelaw.blogspot.com. Did our last caller hang on, or do we go?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, do you have another question or comment? Because we do have some other callers. We do have some
No, I don't have any question. I just thank you for I'll let other people. I just wanted to say about Abraham Lincoln, though, Abraham Jonas was his discoverer and his mentor behind the scenes.
Okay,
okay. Thanks. Thanks, Charles.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Let's take Murr in Wisconsin. Murr?
Well, hello. You can hear me now.
Yes.
Hi, Deanna.
Yes.
I'm Vincent.
Hello. Hi.
Vincent was my grandfather's name. He made his own violin.
Wow.
Yeah, but he calls it a fiddle. It was a regular concert violin. But anyway, I think it was a couple years ago. Is that there? Can you hear the audio all right? I don't know if it's breaking up here or there.
It's fine. Do you have a question?
Yes. Yes. A couple years ago, I'd called into John Moore's because a couple of our soldier listeners were very upset that on his website, when you turn it on, was the Israeli News Live logo, which was two flapping Israeli flags. And it very much disturbed them because they had found out that all the wars were for them. You know, that we were dying not for any good purpose, but for them. So anyway, I had called him and asked him about that. And right away, they're Christian people, Steve Bannon, Jewish, and his wife, Yana, she's Czech Jew, but her father is a Jewish one, so in Israel, she's a goy. So anyway, they've both done a lot of research, and especially her, and they changed it right away and put two peace doves up. But I got talking to John Moore about Noahide, and he tried to belittle it and say, you know, it's like Cheese Day, okay? Seeing as how I'm calling from Wisconsin. So then the next time we talked about it, I guess he was trying to be more sensitive, and he said it was more like Ice Cream Day. So, but, of course, I know that's not true at all. And then I had listened and studied and heard you and Dr. Day and all kind of other research, and you mentioned Michael Brown. He kind of tricked E. Michael Jones into coming on, and then he smeared the editing around so he could call him a Christian anti-Semite. And this was just before the Poway staged event. They have the information behindhand, the hidden tyranny, okay? They've got intel inside. That's Israel inside everything, okay? Anyway, the rabbi there's fingers healed. Isn't that nice? They grew back, but after he set him up like this, right away, Dannon and the ambassador from Israel in the UN also said the same thing. So they're starting to clamp down really tight, but a lot, you've got to figure all these staged events, and this is what else I was telling John Moore, because, you know, he has his gun people on and everything, and he said, well, it never happened, no staged events. They were all to show that legally, not lawfully, but legal precedent was being set that the Goy had to have Noahide laws administered by Sanhedrin because clearly we couldn't take care of ourselves. You know, even having these.
If you see every time that there is a shooting, a death, a murder, whatever, theft, the just general decay of society, they come forward and they say, well, we need the Noahide laws to rectify this. As for your friend, I've heard this rubbish too, that Education Day is like National Ice Cream Day. No, National Ice Cream Day Congress is not recognizing that the seven laws of ice cream are the foundation upon which the nation was founded, or that it's our responsibility to educate people about it, or that without it we stand in peril of chaos. none of that. I mean, that's a joke, and he's insulting people's intelligence to tell
exactly.
people that
actually he's a very good.
Day.
Yeah, he's a very good broadcaster right here on Republic Broadcasting, John Moore, in the mornings on weekdays, and he's Army Intel. And so he knows all this, but they don't want to believe it. They can talk about China. Oh yeah. But they can't say that all this intel inside and everything is stolen and then sold to China. So Israel ultimately has all the things tied up because they have to be behind all of it so they can run things. And this has been going on through history. Like you, I was glad you mentioned because I was going to say about Solomon's Temple. That's what Masonry is. And above the 33rd degree, the year that Christ died in his life, right, you have to denounce Christ in Masonry. See, people don't want to bring that part out either. And whether you believe in Christ or Trinity or not, it's a fact, okay? God is a creator, and he's over all this. He knows what's going on. He's letting it happen as we need to learn from it. I mean, how did we live through Obama and Mike Schell? You know, and all the other ones before them that were selling us out. It wasn't just one administration. I think there's trying to be some Marines pulled back in. But ultimately, it is the usury system. Okay, capitalism is nationalized usury. Plus, communism is communitarianism. This is what we are all under. The law is even coded as that in France right now.
Communism and capitalism are Rothschild's European plan. And they both came from the same source.
Right, right. But I'm saying capitalism is usury. It's nationalized usury.
Sure.
People like to think of that as, you know, and maybe some pie-in-the-sky idea is different. And also with the Kabbalah. Now, Pike wrote Revelations, and of course in the Bible it's singular, Revelation. But with the Kabbalah. Now, this is interesting because I know when I was reading, studying, I was about to mess with it.
Do you have a question, Murph, for our guests? Because we do have some other callers lined up.
Okay, I just want to present this to him and see what he thinks, okay? On the page, it would say the female side of the Kabbalah is on the left side. But on the page, it would show it on the right-hand side. It would be by your left hand. Now, Tim Riefat, and I guess others, showed that Madonna in that Eurovision thing in Tel Aviv flipped the pillars right in front of all the rabbis. So I think we're starting to see a lot more revealing in that respect, too. I just wonder what you thought about that.
You know, I know a lot of people talk about the Kabbalistic side of this. That's not really my area of expertise. I know that there's occultism in this. The Noahide laws, I don't think, are necessarily spoken of in the Kabbalah. However, I do know that they are using Kabbalistic mysticism to entice people. So people might not be interested, or not everyone is going to be interested in these very kind of conservative, orthodox ideas. A lot of people are. I mean, that's why Muslims are interested. A lot of Christians are interested because they hear no idolatry, no blasphemy, no homosexuality, no killing, no stealing, no animal abuse, setting up courts of justice. And they say, this really sounds great. This is what I believe in. And some of them do want more harsh punishments because they believe that Christianity has been too lenient. And that's why we kind of have the problems that we have today. But I do know that there's an area of it where they try to endear you to Judaism by using the Kabbalah, and it sounds all spiritual, and it sounds New Age, and it sounds occulty, and all that kind of stuff. But as for the Kabbalah and the Noahide laws, I really don't have any information on that. I don't think that there's much cross-section between those two schools of thinking.
I don't know either. It's probably all related. But listen, Crino, Christian in name only, religions are man-made for control. We are spirits, first and foremost. We need no intermediary, any priest for spirit, medicine, or law. This is what we have to do. Take back our self-responsibility. This is each of us.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, let's take Kathleen in Texas. Kathleen?
Hello?
Kathleen, you there?
Apologize to God for not having the scriptural numbers for you. But in one of the Gospels, Jesus is speaking to the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and he says, he uses the word korban, and he says, you have made my father's law of no effect and this korban, and it turns out that, you know, the honor thy father and thy mother, they had changed it so that if they became Pharisees or Sadducees, they didn't have to take care of their parents. Anyway, that was one thing. But, and then, you know, of course, the synagogue, telling them they were from the synagogue of Satan. But I was listening to Michael Savage on Friday the 10th of July. And at one point, between 7 and 8, he was ranting about the people who were doing all the looting and everything, with only one race being important. And he said this reminded him, this is just like what happened in Germany, where they said that the Jews killed Jesus. And I thought, now wait a second, the Jews did kill Jesus, you know, but it just sat there. Well, I mean, I turned it off, but this whole thing about the Trinity and Dr. Lorraine Day writing Who Rewrote the Bible and all of the infiltration by so-called messianic Christians that are or Jews that enter the different churches. We have to be so alert. But just to hear Michael Savage, who had the president on just the week before, and I just was so appalled that he said that. What does he think, that they didn't kill Jesus? And then some people wanting it during Lent,
Kathleen,
when they read.
His real name is Michael Allen Weiner. That's probably why he's presenting information like that.
Yeah, and he's clear about that he's Jewish, but but the thing is that during the Easter vigil or after or before Easter, when they read from the scriptures and they read, you know, different parts of the congregation will take different parts, like to make it theatrical. They want to eliminate the words that say, yes, crucify him, give us Barabbas, and they don't want that to be in there. And, you know, the whole idea that trying to minimize the fact that they did kill Jesus. And now I know the Romans carried it out, but the whole story of Pontius Pilate was clear, you know, so, but it's so that was what I wanted to just bring. I was just so shocked that Michael Savage, who's considered a conservative and all of this, you know, would say such a thing. Okay, well, anyway, thank you, and appreciate the call.
Isn't that interesting that they get other people to do the dirty work?
Yes.
The Romans, Romans instead of. Yeah, like us fighting.
Well, that's what I said about them. And that's what I said about them inducting these Muslims, that they're going into the Muslim world and they're saying, let's work together. Let's make the Noahide and the Sharia work together.
Right. Interesting. Okay, we do have another
Thank you,
Kathleen. Thank you so much. We have Fred in Michigan.
Hey.
Hi, Fred.
Hello. Thanks for having Vince Moon. And I was wondering, within the Noahide text, the Noahide world code, is there reference to the fact that, according to their preeminent rabbis, which I presume are Shabbat Lubavitch, that their god is Lucifer?
I know that there's Jews who have said that. I know that there are Jews that say that. I don't think that Chabad Lubavitch, especially in regards to these Noahide laws, I don't think they're going to come out and tell people
that these are satanic laws or anything like that. But I know a lot of Christians believe that. You know what I mean? It's definitely it's anti-Christian law, and it's deceptive. It's deceptive law. You know, it's not just, they're not just coming in, guns blazing, coming after everyone. You know, this is kind of like, it's a deception going on. So, I mean, if you kind of put everything together, those who are granted authority are doing the beheadings, and there's going to be a great deception, and even the elect would be deceived. Start looking into this slow inculcation of the Noahide laws in the Christian community. If you go on YouTube and type in Noahide laws and Christian or something like that, start going through the videos, you're going to see pastors that are going to come out, and they're saying, well, you know, anyone who's against the Noahide laws are anti-Semitic. This is another thing that they have going on, where they tell you the Noahide laws are in the Bible, they're in the Book of Acts. The Book of Acts doesn't talk about setting up Noahide courts and beheading people. And the Noahide laws are a lot more detailed than just those seven laws. There's lots of details. You need the Talmud to have the Noahide laws. It doesn't come from Christianity. It doesn't come from the New Testament. So whatever their God is, it's a very deceptive God.
Well, let me just say this. Tex Mars was an infrequent guest here at RBN. And one of his books, Voices from the Dead, Tex cites this guy, Simeon Bar Yochai, founder of Freemasonry, hater of Christianity, the best of the Christians kill. He advocated, this is Rabbi Yochai, he advocated sex with children. He authorized it in the Talmud with three-year-old girls as Jewish law. And he said the Holy Serpent is God. The Kabbalah, Zohar, which he authored, were transferred to him by the fallen angels. The Kabbalah, according to Rabbi Yochai, is superior to the Holy Bible, is full of sorcery, black magic, witchcraft. In the 30th degree ritual, Rabbi Yochai awakens from his coffin and speaks to the initiate. He leads the Masonic candidate in renouncing Christianity. He causes him to take on the satanic oath and to henceforth worship only the Masonic deity, Lucifer, and embrace only the Masonic religion that is identical to the ancient mystery religion.
Gentlemen, do we have a quick 3-minute break? We'll pick this up on the other side. Be right back. Alrighty, we are back with our guest, Vincent Bruno, and his website is stopnoahidelaw.blogspot.com, and we have 3 minutes, so let's wrap it up. Fred, did you have another comment or question?
Yeah, really quick, and I just want Vincent to know, with whom everyone I encounter, I will be referring them to his site. Albert Pike, 33rd degree, former Sovereign Grand Commander, Freemasonry, declares, Rabbi Simeon Bar Yochai, who reveals the mystery of the Kabbalah, he alone provides pure truth and holds the key to man's future. I have heard people call and describe themselves as Talmudic Jews, the coast-to-coast AM, and declare themselves superior in every way. I want to ask real quick, what role, if any, did Shabbat Lubavitch Noahide Jews have in the founding of the Crown Colonies and then the Revolutionary War and the Constitutional Convention and the Civil War?
I don't know about that. Chabad Lubavitch came from Russia. I don't really know when they were started. I think they started around the 1700s. I don't know when they became a power to reckon with that can influence societies the way that they're doing now. But I don't think they had much to do with that. But they have come central states. They have control over the United States government, the United Nations. I don't know. I know that Chabad wasn't necessarily the only organization working on that Vatican infiltration. Freemasonry, I'm sure, was infiltrated by non-Chabad Jews. Don't fall into the trap of saying everything is Chabad, because that's what the Noahides want and the Jews want you to slip into, where everything, you know, it's this one radical sect. It's not all of Jewry. It's not the state of Israel. It's the state of Israel. It's AIPAC. It's united with Israel. It's everyone.
Yeah, and I would say Zionism is Bolshevik Judaism. Thank you.
Thanks, okay. Carol.
Thank you, Fred. Okay, we have about 1 minute. What a lot of information you've produced on your website, and I hope that people will visit.
Yes, and please sign the petition to have these laws repealed. The more people we have, the more people in Congress and in other high powers are going to start listening to. And that's, I want to end it on, these laws need to be repealed. They want those laws to stay in there. You will notice they will do everything in their power to make sure you don't repeal these laws. They don't care how offensive they are to you. You know, they're going to go to great measures to convince you, like that woman that just called in, it's National Ice Cream Day. No, it is not National Ice Cream Day. These laws need to be repealed. They don't want them to be repealed. Believe me, we need to do this to draw out Jewry. They will come out and they will fight very hard, and they will expose themselves in doing so.
Wow. Okay. Well, we need to revisit this in a while. I really do. I would really love to have you come back. Like I say, the information that you've given, and oh my gosh, you could spend weeks looking through the website and reading the details. And you have direct links to this stuff. It isn't just what you're claiming. You have direct links to everything that you claim. It's amazing. So,
yeah, I'm
appreciate
Jewish sources. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Mainstream Jewish sources.
Your research.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you for having me on.
Thank you, Vincent. Take care.
You too.
Bye bye. Bye bye, listeners. Talk with you next week. Thank you. Have a great week. Bye bye.